Let's go back to Luke chapter 6 and then 1 Peter 1 again. We're looking at the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount or the Sermon on the Plain, the various names that are given to this magnificent message from the Lord. Rejoice, verse 23, in that day being, of course, the day of your persecution, when men shall hate you and separate you from their company and reproach you and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. The message is rejoice. It is to rejoice and to leap for joy. For behold, your reward is great in heaven, for in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. And so we are to rejoice. That's what it says. And all the other writers primarily say the same thing. And we are to rejoice, as we said earlier, for two reasons. One, our heavenly reward is not affected by whatever man can do down here. Number two, because we are in good company. I want you to go back to 1 Peter chapter 1. We were looking at this and spent a great deal of time in the first 21 verses. We didn't quite finish those first 21 verses yet, but we are to rejoice. And this was written to those who were scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. They were scattered by way of persecution. And Peter writes quite an epistle of encouragement to the folks that were scattered abroad. And he focuses their attention not on the current trials, but on the reward afterward of suffering. In fact, he tells them that their trials are just a test of their faith, that they are that which God uses to actually test the validity of anyone's profession. And as long as they saw these as such, they wouldn't have any problem. And remember, Peter was there at the mount or the plain when Jesus gave this beatitude. And here it is years later, he's writing to disciples of Christ and telling them the same truth. They're elect, they're blessed, their reward is in heaven. It's an inheritance that's great, incorruptible, undefiled, eternal, and not on earth, not affected by anything that is earthly at all. And then he said in verse 5 that they, as well as their reward, are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation. There's the finality of salvation that happens at the end. And then he says, wherein ye greatly rejoice. Well, what's the wherein you greatly rejoice? In the fact that you have an inheritance that's in heaven, unaffected by anything down here, and that you are secure. There's nothing that could keep you from heaven. Now you rejoice in that. And I guess my rant was, where's the rejoicing over heavenly issues? He says, wherein you greatly rejoice. These folks greatly rejoiced in the promises of the future, in heaven to come. Where's the rejoicing today? And that's what he's asking. Where is it? Though now for a season, if need be, you are in heaviness through manifold temptations or trials. Many of them. Many and from all different directions. And he's saying, you're still rejoicing in what's to come. He says in verse 7 that these manifold trials are the test of your faith. And that the value of tested faith is far more precious than the most valuable metal on earth. And that's gold. Though it be tried by fire, might be found unto praise and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen you love. And I ask, well, how do you love someone you haven't seen? Well, first you suffer and then you live for him. You obey him as obedient children. That's how you prove your love for the Lord, obeying what he says. And what does he tell us? He tells us to endure in suffering. Focus on heaven. The trials of your faith, they're precious. Endure, go through them. Don't run away. Don't think that you know what your faith is if it's just all intellectual in your head. That's stupid. How many people have I seen? I'm not going to say we. How many people I've seen throughout the years that the second their faith gets tested, a real test, they fold up because they were busy keeping their faith in their head. It never got a chance to be tested by God. So they never really knew. And I've always said, you never know whether you have any genuine faith until it's tested faith. True faith is tested faith. If it's not tested, you don't know whether it's real. And the only way to find out is to go through a test. And not just a test according to these verses, but manifold. They were in heaviness. These people were burdened. They were grieved at the amount of testing. But it was a testing of their commitment to the Lord. In whom have ye not seen you love, in whom though now ye see him not, yet believing. Believing what? That you'll see him again. That you'll see him. Ye rejoice with joy unspeakable and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, even the salvation of your souls, etc., etc. He says in verse 13, gird up the loins, ye might. Wherefore, gird up the loins. Get your mind together. Get focused. Be sober. Be alert. Hope to the end. For the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ, the fulfillment of your grace comes when he comes. As obedient children. A child of God who is properly waiting for the coming of the Lord waits in obedience. As obedient children. Obedience is not an option, nor is it a struggle. It should never be an issue to obey the Lord. I don't get this. It's like people have to be convinced and coerced. And their arm has to be twisted. You need to obey the Lord. That's not Bible. Whom have ye not seen you love? If you love him, Jesus said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. What's the big deal? There is no big deal. It's that big deception that many people are under. That someone has to convince them how to love the Lord. If you have to be convinced, then you need to be born again. Well, what's the manifestation of obedient children? The exact antithesis to the world. Not fashioning yourself, not conforming yourselves according to the former lust in your ignorance. You were ignorant of spiritual things. You were ignorant of salvation. You were ignorant of the grace of God, ignorant of the provisions of God, ignorant of salvation, ignorant of Christ, ignorant of the glories of heaven. All these things you are totally ignorant of. Everyone is without Christ. And he says, all you did in that past pre-converted behavior was live according to your lust. Your ignorance of God's provisions forced you to live in no other passion but in your lust. And he says, you can't fashion yourself. You can't conform yourself to the former lust in your ignorance. But as he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of life. He called us to holiness. Or as Paul said to the Thessalonians, for God has not called us unto uncleanness, but unto holiness. The salvific call calls the believer to holiness, not uncleanness. God never called the person from uncleanness to uncleanness. That's stupid. The call of God, the salvific call, is a call to holiness. As he which hath called you is holy, so be holy in all manner of conversation or lifestyle. All of it. All of our life is to be affected by that holy call. That's what it says. Because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. See how simple that is? It's written. That's why. Why should I be holy? Because it is written, be holy. You be holy, for I'm holy. That's reason enough. Why do you need another reason? Why do you need another reason? Why do people want another reason? Well, I need to be convinced. Listen, you don't have to be convinced if you understand the nature of a command. A command is not asking you to think about something. A command is saying, do it. That's the reason. Okay, that's reason enough. And if you call on the Father, now that's the Father who called you to be holy. And if you call on the Father, if you are the ones who keep calling the Father as if he were your Father, who without respect of persons judgeth according to every man's work, pass the time of your sojourning here in fear. You're just passing through. There's no permanency down here. Look at the verse again. past the time of your sojourning. Okay, there's no permanency down here. You're just here for a very short time. You're on a journey. You're traveling. You know, you got your portable tent. There's no permanence here. And then you're gone. He says the amount of time that you have on this earth to pass, you better pass in the fear of God. Because God's no respecter of persons. For as much as you know that ye were not redeemed with corruptible things as silver and gold from your vain lifestyle received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot, who verily was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you, who by him do believe in God that raised him up from the dead and gave him glory, that your faith and hope might be in God. You endure because our heavenly reward is not affected by what man or circumstance can do down here. Nothing. Can't change it. Can't touch it. That forces people to actually challenge themselves to really focus whether they really believe in the life after. And let me tell you, if everything that is valuable is in heaven, then we ought to be living for heaven. We know everything down here is corruptible and transitory and temporary. There's nothing permanent. And we can't afford to live our lives for the temporary and try to, you know, lay our stake our claim to here in the temporary. We don't want to give up anything. And you know what? You're going to give up everything. We keep fighting to give up, and you're going to give up everything anyway. You can believe me when I tell you or not, a lot of people have just lost a lot of things. And they thought they were going to be here permanently. They thought that their houses and their businesses and their livelihood was going to be here because it's always been here. And in their mind, it was without change because routine builds dependency, builds a deception that they think things can't change. And so they fight to hold on to whatever fantasies in their head. They think everything's going to be the way that it is. And then one day, wham. That's called reality. That's called reality. Sometimes people's lives change in an instant. Sometimes they change forever. And people lose everything in an instant. Because they have this mentality that, well, things have gone on the same way. That's what 2 Peter 3 says. People deny the coming of the Lord and his judgment because they say since the beginning, everything just continues the way that it has always been. That's their deception. That's what 2 Peter 3 says. All things continue as they've been from the beginning of creation. And they were willingly ignorant to believe that. Even though they've seen judgment after judgment from the hand of this same God who declared future judgment, they said, no, everything happens and is going to continue the way it's always been, even though there's no evidence of that, but quite the contrary. And Peter goes right to the flood. If everything continues the way that it has been since the beginning of creation, the first thing that happened was a flood. So everything doesn't happen or doesn't continue the way that it continues since the beginning. And people live their lives, if their livelihood, their life is going to just continue on. They're going to be able to do this. They're going to be able to do that. And they put no emphasis on the spiritual. And I'm telling you, you better plant your flag in that which is spiritual. And stop planting your flag in everything earthly because it's not going to survive. Not at all. And they plant their whole life. Everything about their life is all physical, material, temporal, corruptible, defiled, transitory, temporary. And I talk to people like this. Well, you know, we rode the wave of prosperity in California. Now, welcome to reality check. Someone asked me the other day, well, how low you think stocks going to go? I was going to go, you know, about 8,000. Ha, ha, ha. It went below 8,000 on Friday and came back up. So you're a preacher, and your point is what? This is reality. This is a correction. It needed to be done years ago, and now, and every day since it needed to be corrected, it has made the problem worse and worse, made a bigger balloon. And boom, it's going to take a long time for this thing to correct because the housing market isn't even corrected yet. So you got a housing market correction on top of a stock market correction. Both of these things running simultaneously has never happened in this country. This country is going down fast. And now global markets are tanking all over the world because of America, supposedly. And now they're saying, well, we need to have a global market. I wonder about who said stuff like that. Right in the book of Revelation, right in Daniel. All these markets are now gearing up. All the economies are starting to gear up towards a one world government. And since everybody in their wrong mind loves Obama so much, you know, one man wrote me, Obama is loved by the world. And that's why we should vote for him, because if everybody who loves Obama in the world, if we have him as our president, we will be loved too. I'm not interested in being loved by the world. I love United States sovereignty. I like to keep this country sovereign. I don't want to be the U.S. of Europe or the U.S. of Russia or the U.S. of Islam. I love the sovereignty of the United States of America. Build higher walls. Keep people out. I love this country. I don't want it turned over to socialism or communism or whatever. Just leave it alone. But everything is happening. It's all happening. Why? Because people have no regard for God. And so-called believers are getting sucked right into it. Right into it. All we want is what we want down here. All that's important to us is right down here. And we don't want to let it go. And then when God takes the divine crowbar and pops it from our hand, we lose our mind. Proving that we were in love with it all along. We don't want change. But change is coming. And our hearts should have been changed. We got saved. Changed towards heaven. Where before we didn't care about heaven, now that's all we care about is heaven. But now, you know, in today's compromising, laid-back, apostate church, you can have both. No matter what the Lord says, you can't have either one of them if you don't have him. And you certainly can't have both if you have him. Neither would you want both. You're going to suffer. Back to verse 23 of Luke 6. Great is your reward in heaven. You should leap for joy at the moment of your persecution and affliction. You should leap for joy because your reward is great in heaven, not down here. If you want heaven's reward, well, you're going to suffer on earth. If you want earth's reward, you're going to lose heaven. Pick your choice. You'll never have both. No one ever else has, and no one else is going to. Thus saith the Lord. Right in his word, it'll never happen. If we're not willing to lose everything down here and our own life besides, we even can't even be a disciple, let alone talk about receiving anything. Duck and dodge and hide and run from suffering and affliction. That's a sure way to judgment. Rejoice ye in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven, for in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. We admire the prophets. We like to talk about David and Daniel, this one, and Ezekiel and Jeremiah, Zechariah, Malachi. We like to talk about all the prophets. We just don't want to be like them. How wonderful it is they preached and taught during times of apostasy. Yeah, you forget about the suffering too. See, we like to forget. Oh, no, hold it, BBP. You're talking about suffering. No, we just like the message. We like the suffering. In the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. We are in good company. And we should rejoice. Make your life count for God. It's almost silly for me to have to say it, because it would happen that way if you were a believer. Why should I have to say, make your life count to God? Well, what is it counting for now? If it's not counting for God now, well, when was it ever his? When did it ever matter to him? When did it ever matter to him about your life if you have to, let's see, I need to make a decision to make my life count for God. Well, when was it his then? And we tell young people that in all kinds of meetings and what, make your life count for God. Well, when was it ever his? Why would you have to tell a believer to make their life count for God? If they understood the nature of salvation, the beauty and the wonder of Christ, what other life would they want? But we don't think in those terms. Greater men have endured and were rewarded, and are examples of men who were persecuted far greater than we are, and yet trusted in God and his promises of reward. Greater men have suffered far greater than we have, and God rewarded them accordingly. What are we crying about? It would take months for us to teach of the persecution of the prophets. I'm going to step aside. Let the writer of Hebrews teach us. Go to Hebrews 11. Won't it be necessary to spend months on all the prophets? We'll let just one portion of a chapter do it for us. And this is really just a short version. But people suffered for righteousness' sake. They love the Lord for righteousness' sake. We don't want to give up anything. Well, then get saved. Because you give up everything then. Verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Look at that. Moses was already rich at the hands of Egypt. Look at the verse. Choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. He chose it. He was already rich. And he chose affliction with an afflicted people than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Consciously, in the midst of riches, chose affliction with the afflicted people of Israel than to enjoy the pleasures that were surrounding him in Egypt. Esteeming or valuing or putting a value on the reproaches of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. He put on the one hand the riches of Egypt and on the other hand the reproaches of the Messiah. And he said, the reproaches of Christ are greater riches than all the treasures of Egypt. Oh, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. The payment of the reward of suffering reproach for the Messiah was far greater, and he knew that. He knew that in the Old Testament. By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. For he endured as seeing him who was invisible. He endured. Endurance. He just waltz out of Egypt. All the things that happened to Moses in the wilderness, all the things that happened to him dealing with Israel and Egypt. He endured. Seeing him who was invisible. He saw the invisible God. What a wonderful play on words. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith he passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians are saying to do or drown. By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encompassed about 7 days. And that's during the time of Joshua. By faith the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace. And what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and of Samson, and of Jephthah, and of David also, and Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance. Tortured means they were killed, not accepting deliverance. They had the means to escape, but they chose to die, not accepting deliverance. Why? That they might obtain a better resurrection. They're always thinking about the future glory. And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings. These are beatings and whippings. The moreover of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn asunder. In other words, they were cut in half, which is what was said traditionally happened to Isaiah. Were tempted or tested, were killed with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. They chose this life. They chose it. And what do we choose? To live like Egypt. They chose suffering, of whom the world was not worthy. The world that persecuted and afflicted these men were not even worthy to be around them and to have them in their presence. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. They lived like animals, lived in holes. And these all, having obtained the good report through faith, received not the promise, God having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. You're in good company. Others have suffered. And they are examples to us of suffering affliction. And I frankly don't care, you know, if you don't want to suffer. I don't. Because one thing's for sure. If you're God's child, you will in this life. The tests are coming. And it's going to be tests that nobody can help you. Except God. And that's fine. I'd rather be afflicted every minute of every day than go to hell in peace on earth. See, all this proves whether we truly are of God or not. The tests, the trials, the afflictions, they all prove our faith or absence of it. It's easy. The yibbity-yab faith when we have never been tested. It's easy to live a sheltered life, a pampered life, a life of ease and luxury and want and fulfillment of whatever. But all real Christianity was never that way. And it's not that way now. People suffer. They die. They're doing it now. And all true believers suffer affliction for the sake of the gospel, if they're Christians at all. Because Jesus said the world's going to hate you. And that hasn't changed. I don't see any addendum or redaction to what he said. In fact, I see support from the experience and evidence of those who were there when he said it, and for those who followed them thereafter. You would think today, according to all these lying buffoons on television in the religious world, that none of these things that Jesus said were true. Oh yeah, they're true. Every one of them. And it's true that judgment's coming too. Oh, well, let's get to the woe part right now. Turn back to Luke 6. This is the antithesis of the blessed state. It's the woe state. You have the blessed state, the state of the blessed person who has all these things, who suffers these things, and now we see the antithesis of the blessed state, which is the woe state. But woe, but there's a contrast. Woe unto you that are rich, for ye have received your consolation. Woe unto you that are full, for ye shall hunger. Woe unto you that laugh now, for ye shall mourn and weep. Woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you, for so did their fathers to the false prophets. If you notice their exact antithesis of everything that's of the blessed state. Look, for example, rejoice ye in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven, for in like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. And look at verse 28. Verse 26. Woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you, for so did their fathers to the false prophets. They're all the antithesis of the blessed state. So you got the woe state. Right after Jesus pronounced the blessed state of those who were spiritually enriched, though poor in this life and poor because of what they gave up to follow Jesus as his disciples, he began to pronounce a series of woes or cries of impending doom to those who had no spiritual riches, who primarily had everything in this life and nothing in the afterlife. They had no life, no spiritual life, nothing in the afterlife, had no desire for the hereafter, and nothing now. And listen, Luke's going to tell us as we go through this. He's going to outline all these people who tell us, who show us, the difference between having all this earthly stuff and the absence of spiritual riches. In fact, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Getting ahead of myself. I told you some time ago in the study of Luke that Jesus had nothing good to say about those who were rich. Those persons whose lives were determined by their abundance in this life only desired nothing spiritual and therefore were living towards impending doom of judgment to come. If you desire not the spiritual, you live towards doom. That's it. And you can't straddle the fence of life. You either on one side, listen, I know people like a lot of these little pithy sayings, a lot of these little sayings. Yeah, you just straddling the fence. There's no fence to straddle. As far as God is concerned, you are either for him or against him. That's it. There is no fence. Straddling the fence. There's no fence to straddle. Either for Christ or you're against him. That's it. Notice that all of these woes, again, were the exact opposite of the blessed pronouncement on his disciples. Let's look at all of these woes individually. Verse 24, woe unto you that are rich, for you have received your consolation. Woe to the wealthy, for you have in full your comfort. Now, I know some rich people personally. I do. I did not know they were rich until they started talking to me, but they're quite wealthy. You know, I play racquetball, and I've learned that some people are quite wealthy. And their arrogance reveals it. They're quite snooty. Some of them are real snooty. You know, I just go for the sport. I don't go for the snoot. You know, I'm there to play. I don't care. But some people are quite snooty. And if they do talk to you, it's almost they feel that moment they want to perform some kind of random act of kindness. And so they'll step down from their snooty cloud and they'll talk to the peon, namely the big black preacher. You know, in this age where no one wants to be seen as a racist, let's talk to the black person and show them we're not really racist. You know, Harley's a good guy. You know, he's one of the intelligible black people. You know, he's articulate. He's not a radical. He's not one of the Democrats trying to get his hand out and burn down all the cars and kill Whitey. That's not who he is. He's an articulate guy. Really a nice guy to be with. And he's always polite. And, you know, even though we talk to him like sometimes like he's dirt or ignore him in the conversation, just turn away and act like he's not even saying anything of any importance. But overall, he's a nice guy. We kind of like having him around, especially if we're shorthanded and we need someone we can beat. So we'll just ask him to come in and, you know. They have their consolation, their wealth. I know people that have 3-4 houses. One guy, I don't know, he lives with another woman, and yet he has a house where his wife lives in one house, and he lives in another house with another woman. I'm like, how did he work it out? Never mind, don't answer that question. They have all this wealth, and they're way up in age. One guy, he barely can walk, and they got all this money, and they barely can move. I'm like, why don't you use some of this wealth to try to, you know, help your physical condition? Get a new knee or something. Bionic your life, because, you know, you're going to lose it all when you grow. It's kind of funny to watch the wealthy. They're comic relief sometimes. It makes you think, well, you don't have it. Because you look at how they treat others and how they believe what they believe of themselves when they have it. It's this arrogance, this security they take comfort in. And when they don't have it, they lose their marbles. And the Lord said, woe unto you. You have in full your comfort. The comfort and security of the wealthy is their temporal means. How can you have security in temporal means? If anything, this last month showed us, and this month even makes it more abundant, you cannot have comfort in temporal means. That's crazy. You are not in control of your means. You're not in control of your circumstance. If the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. If the Lord will, we'll do this or that. You know, well, this or that encompasses everything. The net result is that they're temporal means blinds you to the need of spiritual and the afterlife. It just blinds it. Don't need it. Notice the simple lesson. Notice it. Don't be blinded. Those whose lives are geared towards wealth are not geared towards the spiritual. It cannot be. If the foundation of that life is moolah, they have no desire. Money, for those of you in Carson, they have no desire for the spiritual. There's always going to be a conflict, and guess which is going to suffer? It's going to be that spiritual all the time. It's either going to be money or the Messiah. That's it. Every single person who has issues of wealth, not necessities, wealth, if they're used to having that lifestyle where they're living and making all this money and loving money, watch the spiritual. Where's the spiritual? Be more the realistic question. Conflict is always there. You know why? Because the Lord said it was going to be there. You can't serve two masters. The Lord set up a wall. And he set up a process that cannot be crossed over. He says, if you're going to live for wealth, you can't live for him, and you won't. And people for centuries have tried to do it, and they have all failed. The first failure is you call God a liar. If he said it ain't going to happen, it ain't going to happen. Just watch that. Keep in mind, those who have wealth automatically have comfort in wealth. You notice they don't save nothing? They just keep spending. Because to them, they don't think about what can happen to their wealth. They just spend it, spend it, spend it. They never cut out a coupon, never go to a Walmart, anywhere. To them, it's all, we got to go to the most expensive place, get the most expensive stuff, buy the most. They don't think about the spiritual, because the spiritual will tell them to be wise in earthly goods, not to put confidence in earthly goods, to give to the poor, to give to the hungry, to give to the fatherless and the widows. It would tell them to do that if they were spiritual with what they have, but they don't do it. So everything becomes, there's a line that's crossed. I don't know where it is for anybody, but there's a line that's crossed that once you get a certain amount of wealth, where you might have had a heart to go outward with it, it comes inward and it stays there. It stays there. It blinds you to the need of the spiritual. It blinds you to the afterlife because your life is concentrated on now. So all your decisions are for the now. The spiritual's gone. It's no longer a priority because it's not even there. But you want what's here now, and you pursue that. And you know what? That never ends. That doesn't end. It keeps going on. We will see a perfect example of this in the rich young ruler. His comfort was in his wealth, and he was willing or not willing to give it up for the eternal. He didn't want to give it up. Master, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life? Well, keep the currents. I have from my youth. Which one? You know, well, I'll tell you what you do. Here's the button. Sell all of what you have. Give to the poor. Follow me. No. He went away. That was his God. He's standing there talking to the Son of God. God the Son. And he says, Lord, Master, good Master, what do I need to do? I'm ready to follow whatever you tell me, Lord, because you're the Lord. You're the good Lord. Okay, give up all that you have. Sell to the poor. Give it to the poor. Take up your cross. And you'll have treasure in heaven. Follow me. He went away grieved. Why? Because what Jesus told him was wrong? No. Because he couldn't do what Jesus said to do? No. He went away grieved because he had great possessions. He wasn't about to part from them. He wanted Jesus and his stuff. And then when he was walking away all sad, Jesus said, how hardly shall it be that those that rich ever enter the kingdom. And the disciples were stunned, like, well, who they can't be saved? He said, well, men, this is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. But it's not possible for a man that has wealth to want the kingdom, because they are diametrically opposed to each other. So the wealthy, they have their consolation. Isn't that something? He left grieved with all of his wealth and no salvation. A woe indeed. How about the example of the rich man who counted on his wealth? He boasted of his wealth and of the security. He thought that it would bring his soul for many years to come. He sat down, so I have many goods laid up for many years. He's talking to himself. He has arrived. All his dreams are fulfilled. He had it all. He was ready. I could see him kicking back, so maybe yell out, so I have everything I need now. What do I do now? Many goods for many years. It blinded him to the fact that his life and wealth was not his to control. And God killed him that same night. And the woe came. We will also see in Luke the example of the rich man and Lazarus. The rich man had no concern for Lazarus at all. The rich man would not even give Lazarus the crumbs that fell from his table. He had to compete with the dogs, with the mutts, with the mangy, flea-bitten dogs. Lazarus had to compete with dogs to get the crumbs, the refuse, the stuff the rich man wouldn't even eat. As far as the rich man was concerned, he didn't care for Lazarus until they both died. And then the rich man was, his riches didn't get him out of torment. He was in torment and not able to do anything but to suffer the woe he deserved for not caring for anyone but for himself and being spiritually empty. And he saw Lazarus. Oh, yeah. Oh, Father Abraham, could you send forth Lazarus? Oh, now Lazarus is important to you. Even in hell, the man is still vain. He wouldn't even repent, wouldn't even acknowledge Father Abraham what he did was wrong. Just send him, like, cool my scotch, my tongue, because I'm tormenting this flame. Dip the tip of his finger in some water, Lord, Abraham. Send him here to me. Abraham said, you have what you had, and now you got what you got. And Lazarus, in his life, he didn't have what you had, but now he's got what he has. And, oh, by the way, there's a fixed gulf between me and you, so there ain't no crossing over. Too late. Woe came. Bye. As I stated already, woe to the wealthy, for you have in full your comfort. The comfort and security of the wealthy is in their temporal means. Sound like you just jealous. Say what you want. The net result is that it blinds you to the need of the spiritual and the afterlife. It blinds you. Turn to Psalm 49. You just sound like you're jealous. You can believe whatever you want. You can say whatever you want. Doesn't matter. To the chief musician, the psalm for the sons of Korah, hear this, all ye people. So this is a general psalm to everybody. Give ear, pay attention, all ye inhabitants of the world, both low and high, rich and poor together. Oh, this is a universal message here. My mouth shall speak of wisdom, and the meditation of my heart shall be of understanding. I will incline mine ear to a parable. I will open my dark sayings upon the harp. Wherefore should I fear in the days of evil, when the iniquity of my heels shall compass me about? They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. Wealth will get you nowhere with God. God cannot accept a bribe from you. Why should he have to? He owns everything. What are you going to give to God that's not his, including yourself? None of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. For the redemption of their soul, see, that's the context. The soul is unaffected by wealth. You can't get God to do anything by money. The Catholic Church should pay attention to this one. None of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. For their redemption, their soul is precious, and it ceases forever. That he should still live forever and not see corruption? A fool thinks he's going to live forever and not die. Every day you get up, your body corrupts. Every day. You little baby and some bassinet, oh, you googling and caggling and peeing and all that. You're going to get up one and your body going to keep, you're going to keep getting older. If you just keep living, you'll experience the corruption. See, now we're young and full of vigor. Well, some of us used to be anyway, but young and full of vigor, vim, and stupidity. And now it's like I can take on the world because I'm young and full of vigor and vim and stupidity. And I'm okay. So I can run and not get faint. I can leap and jump and everything is great. I want to exercise all day long and do aerobics. I can do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. One day, though. That first twang in the side of your rib cage. Oh, well, you know, a day it might go away. And you back out there again. And you're just doing your... And then the next thing you know, 4 or 5 years later, you get 2 or 3 twangs, and it take you about 4 or 5 days to recover now. And where you used to take your herbs, your white willow bark and valerian to calm that muscle down, how does he know? Shh, be quiet. Now you got to take some, you know, ibuprofen and some, you know, naproxen, some big time medicine, 500, 800 milligrams, you know, elephant giant pills, and you got to knock yourself out. You don't recover. That's all the experience of the corruption happening. Oh, then you go down to the doctor, you get your first checkup, take your blood pressure. Your blood pressure is a little high for someone in their 20s, and they take your blood. Oh, man. You messed up. Come on back in here. You need to see the specialist about filling the blank. All part of the corruption. Yeah, you thought you was invincible. You might make it to 30, 35. You know, you get a cut, it don't heal too well. You know, when you got a cut as a child, before the sun went down, it was already healed. And now it's like 5 months later. What's that scar still there for? You know, you don't heal that good anymore. You catch a cold now, it'll take you 2 weeks to recover from a simple cold. You know, because that's that corruption coming in. You know? And when you were young and you could sleep all in the mat. You could sleep all like this. You got no problem at all. Now you sleep with a perfect mattress, perfect pillow. You're going to get that neck pain, clang, and oh, it's going to take 2 or 3 days to find relief. You've got to turn your whole body around because that's part of that corruption. The body's designed to corrupt. Your hair going to fall out. How about your hair fall out? The stuff, teeth is going to fall out. Your toes going to get black. All this stuff, part of the corruption. You're not going to be able to do nothing about it. And that same old person used to laugh at, going to tell you, I told you, keep living. You're going to run into them and go, can you give me some advice? And they just laugh. Yeah, you keep living. That's the advice number two. And you're going to keep on. Make it to 40, 45. And all those aerobics, you just watch people do it now. They done converted to walking slow. Because if you walk too fast, oh, there's the shins. They're gone. Ankle all messed up. That's going to take you 3 months to recover. You know, actually one, but you're going to take two more because you're lazy. See, now you're the corruption made you lazy. You got comfortable, so you get lazy, so your shin never really recovers. You don't ice it or put heat on it. You don't take anything for it. So you just get lazy. See, as the corruption begins to set in, you start gearing your mind towards being lazy. You get lazy. That's part of the corruption. That's why people get sick and die. The corruption drives them to do nothing. They do zero. Why do you have to tell a person to go exercise? When they know doggone well when they were young and they exercised, they were healthy. Now you got to convince people. There are some states that pay people to exercise. You got to pay somebody to go exercise? Pay them. Because they're too lazy. So you got to bribe people to go exercise. That's pitiful. That's a disgusting, pitiful thing. Corruption sets in. And you might break something. Oh, if you broke it when you were 8, hey, you know, it healed back together. A few pins, you know. A little plaster. Fracture's gone. X-ray, hey, never knew. Break it now. See what happens. You used to be able to do a lot of things. You can't torque that body anymore like you used to. Because once the pain is there, it's there forever. That's all corruption. That's it. Now the rich think they're going to live forever. And I just gave you a very, very small picture of natural corruption of the body. The hair gets gray, falls out. They get spots on their face that were never there. And they have doctors peeling off spots on their face because they don't know whether they're malignant or benign. They think they're going to live forever. They hide all that under with makeup. Implants and fat sucking and all that stuff. And that's supposed to give them this invincibility. Why do you got to do all that then? A 20-year-old face and the 80-year-old neck does not hide corruption. And I've seen stuff like that. It's ghastly. Look, she's all full like the neck look like the dog or turkey. Gobbly turkey. She's all full. Do I look, honey, you know? And you know he's going to lie to you. Because he know you suffer corruption. You got money. He wait for the fullness of corruption to come in so he can get your money. Honey, you look beautiful. Let me kiss you. You can do that till the last second. You don't want to kiss that through. Kiss you, honey. Okay. Oh, preach, you so mean. You know I'm telling the truth. Keeps it real. For he that seeth, verse 10, that wise men die, likewise the fool and the brutish person. Brutish meaning stupid. The stupid person perishes and leave their wealth to others. For he's even witness to the fact that people are wisdom, people are stupid. They have plenty of money, they die. They leave everything to whoever. They don't take it with them. But they think they're going to live forever. They're different than other people. They don't think they're going to die, even though they witness people die all the time from all stratas of life. And leave their wealth to other people, like every other human being who has wealth. But not them. They mastered this. They got it. They're different. Their inward thought, here it is, the inward thought is, their houses shall continue forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. You talk about stupid, but these people are consoled in their wealth. They and their families. They have all this money, and they think that they'll live for a ripe old age or whatever, and all their family will live, and all the generations will live after them, and name their towns and cities. Look at the Kennedys family. A tragedy of wealth. And that's one of many. A tragedy of wealth. So much so that people say they're cursed. I bet a whole lot of them folk wish they were in that line to get a little curse with them. They lying. Ain't no curse. It's the tragedy of wealth. And what is that? Woe unto you that are rich, for ye have you receive your consolation. They think that's it. Their wealth is their security. Nevertheless, man being in honor abideth not. A man that's honored and lifted up and who's wealthy and rich and all this kind of nonsense, the Bible says he doesn't remain. He's like the beast that perisheth. He dies like a dog. He dies like an animal. In other words, he dies. He dies like any other animal. Isn't that sad? He's honored before men, but God says he'll die like an animal. This their way is their foolishness, yet their posterity approve their sayings. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Dad, I agree with you. Yeah, you're going to live forever, Dad. You're going to keep on. You're going to keep on. Don't worry about it. I know the doctor said you got 5 minutes to live, but you're going to keep on living. 4 minutes, 59 seconds. doctor was right. Thus, this their way is stupid. Like sheep, they are laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them. And the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. And their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling. The worms will eat that beauty right off them bones. Wealth can't protect them from the worm. Like sheep that lay in the grave, death shall feed on them. You ever wonder why when they get a corpse out of the ground, they exhume a corpse and open up that casket? What do they see? They don't see little Willie in there the way they put Willie in there, with his brim on and his jewelry. Nah, they see something they didn't expect. Now, they expect it because they're scared to open that up. They know what's in there. And you got these caskets that are hermetically sealed. The fool dead. What are you trying to seal it for? We want Willie to go out in style. So you get one of them caskets that are vacuum sealed. You just put your, what do you put your, what's the machine in there? Hook up your, what's the machine, the name of the machine? Hook up your food saver to Willie's casket, suck out all the air from his casket. Guess you're going to preserve him. Only problem is he's going to rot from the inside. And then when they open up that box, they're going to smell Willie. He don't smell clean and fresh either. And they're going to see nothing but skin, if any, is going to be attached to that bone because death fed on him. Gobble him up. Amazing. But God will redeem my soul from the power of the grave, for he shall revive me or receive me. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased, for when he died, he shall carry nothing away. Don't be fearful of someone that gets instant money. Don't worry about it. Don't be like him. Don't envy him. Don't be afraid of him, because when he dies, he's going to take nothing with him. His glory shall not descend after him. Whatever glory he has it down here. Because once he dies as a fool, as a beast. He can't take nothing with him. The glory that man or woman is down here does not go to heaven with him or hell. It does not meet him at the day of judgment. Remember, God is no respecter of anyone's face. Though while he lived, he blessed his soul. And men will praise thee when thou doest well to thyself. Oh, you have friends when you got some green. Everybody's your friend. But nobody wants you when you're down and out. But when you have wealth, everybody's your friend. And they'll speak good of you. Yes! That's the nature of humanity and its wickedness. He shall go to the generation of his fathers. They shall never see light. In other words, you're going to die. All those before him died and were in the ground. We don't like to talk about death. Where do you think you're going when you stop breathing? You ain't going to the next room. You're going in that ground. Man that is in honor and understandeth not is like the beast that perished. A man who is full of honor in this life but has no understanding of God is no better than a dog. No better. It's just like another animal. Woe unto you that are rich, for ye have received your consolation. That's all you got, is your wealth. But the Bible has nothing favorable to say to the rich at all, especially those who will not acknowledge God in it. It's got nothing to do with me being jealous and all this kind of silliness, because that's just stupidity. That's a cloak to cover the fact that people don't want to face the reality of what God says. Just one more verse in closing of Ecclesiastes 5:10. He that loveth silver should not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. Ain't no satisfaction with wealth, because the more you have, the more you want. And you ain't going to never be happy with it. A person who has an appetite for wealth will never be content or satisfied. No matter how much it increases, it will never satisfy the person who seeks it or possesses it. They never are content. They always want more of it and more of what they can do with it. I was telling someone, I'm through with this. I used to work in the housing field temporarily a few years ago. I worked for Great Western. in their mortgage division. And I was responsible actually for approving applications for loans. I worked in the loan department. And in the loan department, you get to see all kinds of interesting things that you'd never see before. And it's amazing. So you get the person would apply for loans, so I'd get the application. First thing you had to do is print up a TRW to see whether this person qualified, because they have to meet a certain standard. So I print up one guy's application. I thought it was a typo. Man lived in Newport Beach. And it has everything you've borrowed, every credit card, every car loan, every everything. The man made $63,000 a month. $63,000 a month. And he was broke. $63,000 a month. And you know, those numbers were inconceivable. I had to call someone. I called a super. Is this accurate? Because you know, I don't know. I never conceived of those. Those things never crossed. I said, is this correct? Is this a typo? He said, no, that's $63,000 a month. 28 credit cards, all maxed out. 28 credit cards, three houses, and then he wanted a home loan. I said, you know, you need to do something. You need to prove this, because I don't want to prove it. I never asked anybody, so you have to prove this. So I can't put my Hancock on that mess there. Because I'm thinking Bible, like, this person don't need no loan. But I couldn't approach that, you know, because my job is to apply biblical mandates to whether I should give a loan to a person. It's like, now I'm going to give this, you deal with this one. $63,000. I should almost call him up. What? $63,000 a month, and you can't even, and you broke? All credit cards maxed out. Best credit cards in the universe, all maxed out. Like, I could not believe, and I've seen a lot of that too. A lot more of that. Businesses, people with tons of money. He that loveth silver should not be satisfied with silver. Nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. Never, ever satisfies. It is not designed to do it. You'll always want more, and you'll always spend more if you get more. Like one of my former bosses told me before he had to go bankrupt his business. He says, I'm just naive enough to ask. I said, well, don't you save anything in the company? He said, Harley, if I want money, I just make more money. I said, but you're making money by robbing Peter to pay Paul to rob Judas. You know, you got four or five layers of money that aren't even yours. Do you have a conscience? I didn't want you to, you know, sell that to me. I just want you to come with me. I just want to know how do you sleep at night? You got three, four, five layers of money that's not even yours. And you buying another house? Why? So I first encountered with a rich man who wasn't really rich. He was rich by stealing. And so I just, you know, the Lord put me with him, and everywhere he went, he would come with me, Harley. I'm like, I got work. I got to come on. You don't want to be there, do you? No, I don't want to be with you either, but I guess I get out the office, you know. So he took me everywhere he went. And we'd have these, you know, yelling conversations because he would, you know, say something. I'd say, you know, brother, you'd be wasting money. I didn't bring you here to, well, what you bring me here for? You know, I'm going to tell it. It was a love-hate relationship. It was funny. It was fun to me because I watch him blow up all the time. Because it's like he was, at sometimes he would really appreciate what I would say to him. And the other times he'd blow up at the same, you know, Harley, you're right. Then I say the follow-up, he'd blow up right then. But it was such a lesson. And I was so free to speak my mind to him. And I would. I would not hold back. I said, why are you buying another house when you can't even afford the one you have now? And it was a big house up in Fullerton, up the hills. What are you? You can't tell me. I said, you ain't got no money. What are you doing? Y'all don't understand. The Bible is right. The Bible is right. You already had a house. He already had a business. He didn't need any more money, but he didn't know how to control himself. That's why when he had it, he never had it. And all that, he dismissed God. And so all he could live for was the here and now. And that's all he did. And God gave him that one opportunity. A big black preacher sitting in his car all the time, everywhere he went. Telling about the gospel, telling about Christ. In his office so many times. Harley, come in office. I need someone to talk to. Steve, I got work to do. Come on, Harley. I need prayer. I said, you need to be saved. I didn't bring you in. I know, but I can't pray for you the way you want me to pray for you, because it would be dishonest for me to do that. I'll go back to work. Then, well, thank you. I was hoping you'd let me get out here anyway. I'm tired of looking at you. So we have time, like, you know, I got work to do, Steve. I ain't got time to be messing with you. You're not serious about the things. Just let me alone. So he slammed the door behind me. They come out 20 minutes later. Come ride with me. I need to go home. Like, man, leave me alone, will you? Lord said, go with it. Okay. Get more of the same. It was almost like he was just trying. It's like no one ever actually sat down and talked to him like this. Or they did. You know, he didn't listen. But it was a lesson. And it was really, because you could see I could see the struggle. Oftentimes it looked like he was almost there. And then it just sucked him back down again. His wife thanked me. I sure thank you for talking to him. But he's just so stubborn. I said, yeah, he is. Do you know the Lord? Because you're going to need the Lord dealing with this man here. It was really a lesson to see. And then the company audited. It was an audit of the company. And everything went downhill from there, because the bubble burst. And his crime was found out. $90,000 stealing. Back in that day, that's a lot of money. $90,000 in the hole. Stealing money from customers. He wanted me to follow that same pattern. I said, no, I'm not doing it. If a customer asks me when I'm going to have their products delivered, I will call FedEx and I will drop ship it to the customer. 2-3 days. Blam! Slam the door, cussing every through the wall. I said, I don't care what you say. That's what you hired me for, but door. I told you I wasn't. I ain't going to do what you tell me to do. And everyone was watching us, you know. It was like a married couple. It was just all this yelling and screaming. And door slamming, like, you know. Tell the customer, hey, your stuff will be. Because they were yelling at me, like, and I don't want nobody yelling at me for something I didn't do. Like, excuse me, but I'm new here. Why are you yelling? Because that guy, Steve, said that my product was going to be here it's been 3 weeks. I said, you're going to have it by Wednesday. Are you sure? I said, my name's Harley Howard. Write it down. You'll have it in 2 days. Call FedEx. Drop ship this to this person. I want it overnighted to him. I gave him 2 days. I'm going to drop it in one. Give it to him. He called back. Thank you so much. And I did it with every customer. Steve was ballistic. He was mad. So that's what you hired me to do. Take care of the customers. He didn't know the blessing he had till it was gone. A man who was a blessing would help get his life right, help get his company right, give him an opportunity to see Christ in the gospel, but he never, ever came forward and received the blessing. That world sucked him back. He was committed to destruction, committed to it. And most people who are committed to wealth end up the same way. Never, ever give it up. They don't realize that they're slaves to men. Slaves to it. But God's word is real. And God is serious. Woe unto you that are rich. You receive your counsel. That's all you got. That's all you have in this life. I was going to say, so enjoy it, but you're not going to. Because it doesn't matter. It's designed to lead you to destruction. And Paul told Timothy to tell those that are rich in this world's good that they need to give that stuff away. And they need to be working for the eternal riches. That's what they need to be working towards. And we'll deal with that, Lord willing, next time. They need to be working towards everlasting wealth. And that's in heaven. And let this stuff down here go. They need to be giving that stuff away. All of it. What about my family security? Well, you know what? Show me in here where that is. Do you believe in assurance? I believe in God. Show me in the Bible where we're supposed to be doing all this stuff anyway. Oh, man, I never heard anyone say that because you don't read your Bible. Tell me, where is that in the Bible? Where's any of this in the Bible? Where's it at? Don't look at me with those strange looks. I'm asking a question. Where's it in the Bible? Lord, thank you again. You make things so clear to us. Again, Lord, they're right here. Before our eyes, the blessings and the woe. We think the woes are blessings and blessings are woes. That's how we flip everything today, Lord. Persecution is a woe and the riches are the blessing. Well, that's not what you say. And Lord, the truth is staring us in the face. What will we do with it? Again. Those who are watching, those that are here, those who are listening, what will we do with the truth? Because it's the truth, whether we do anything with it or not, it's still the truth. And I pray that we would do the right thing by the truth, Lord, as obedient children, and not fashion ourselves according to the former lust in our ignorance, but to be holy because you are holy. We know you don't respect our persons at all. We know that. We're calling upon you. We need to pass our temporal sojourning here in fear of you. Lord, we need to have the right respect and understanding of what really is important. Bless the bread and cup tonight, Father, and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.